Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, so are you getting nervous? You see the polls come out. You see Joe Biden ahead, 3 points, 6 points, 7 points, 8 points. And you're like, what? I can't believe, come on. Joe Biden, really, what's going on with this country? What are these people thinking? And you just assume you can trust the polls because, hey, can't we always? And then you see one on Fox News and you're like, well, Fox News poll has them Biden up a little bit. So, golly, it must be really, really bad. But what if all those polls are not just bad? What if they're disingenuous? Or even worse, what if they're just flat out fake news? So my buddy Steve Dace sent me a text the other day, a video they did earlier in the week. He's on the Blaze TV, blazetv.com, from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern time, right after Glenn Beck's show. And he's been a pollster, a political genius for years. And so I don't have all the answers to all these different questions. But I know people that are smarter than I am. And one of those people is Steve Dace. And so we're going to walk through some of these polls that you're seeing out there and try to talk you down off the ledge because you are, as usual, being manipulated. And Steve, you said this on your video earlier and all the way back to January when you kind of had your phrase for the year on the Steve Dace show on the Blaze TV network was assume you're being lied to. And that was pre-COVID. And that was pretty prophetic. How are you, man?
I'm good. My next catchphrase for the year is, I need to be a multimillionaire. Let's see if that works out as well as you're being lied to did. Yeah.
Well, you know, just manifest it, name it, claim it. I'm sure it'll work out just fine for you. So let's dive into these polls because this is a problem. Most people don't understand polling. I mean, when I'm teaching my high school age homeschoolers, I've got like 65 students this semester walking them through the Constitution and civics in general and explaining to them, hey, the electorate across the country in terms of registered people, 30% Republican, 30% Democrat, 40% independent. Independent's been growing over the years. So then you look at the people that actually vote. And then when you look at a poll, you got to see if you're actually dealing with a representative poll or not. Most people don't do that. They just kind of take it at face value. And you obviously have spent years doing this. So remind everybody about your background in politics and polling in particular. And then let's dive into these four polls that you talked about because people need their eyes opened.
Well, I mean, as a commentator, you know, I've had to learn how to break these things down because campaigns will send you things all the time with their top line results. And you got to figure out, is this fake news or not? And when most people see a poll, they just look at the top line result and they think that top line result is the raw data. They think that a pollster just called 1,100 people randomly sampled with a voter vault, meaning a record of who is likely to vote around the country. And they just did like a tally in a notebook, you know, like George Strait's check yes or no song, you know, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and then they add the tallies and that's the percentage. No, that top line result is the weighted result, meaning how the pollster interprets his own or her own raw data. And I really got to see this up close and personal with the Bob Vanderplaats gubernatorial campaign here in Iowa 10 years ago. The judicial retention election that we did here in Iowa 10 years ago, the Ted Cruz presidential campaign I was a part of, but one of the strategists for that campaign 4 years ago, numerous state legislative campaigns. So at every level that you would poll, judicial, legislative, executive in an election, I've seen it and I've done it. And so, one thing I would say to your audience, when it comes to issue-based polling, and I've told my audience this for more than a decade, do not trust the media on any issue-based poll. And I'll give you an example, because that's all based on the premise of the question. About 6-7 years ago, I was involved in doing some pro-life polling around the country on the rape and incest issue. And what we found is when we asked people, do you believe a woman should be forced to carry a baby to term that she conceived against her will via rape or incest, 80% of the people said no. And that exact same sample, later on in the survey, when we flipped the question around and said, do you think an unborn child should be executed for the crimes of his father? 69% of the people said no.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? Meaning just the way that the question is phrased will often elicit a particular answer. But on horse race polling, meaning who's going to win, who's going to lose, for many, many years, these have actually been fairly accurate. Now, everybody's going to say, well, the polls were wrong in 2016. Well, if you go look at the Real Clear Politics polling average, you're going to see it was pretty close to what the final outcome was. What happened is the battleground state polls way overestimated Hillary Clinton's support, and that's what led to these forecasts saying she was going to dominate in the Electoral College. That's what was wrong. So this year I wanted to find out, you know, given all the data we've been given that is, you know, corrupt to the core on COVID that I've spent 6 months debunking, because a lot of the same people giving us that data
yep.
in the news are the same people giving us the polls. So this week I decided to dig in to the polls, to the what are called the internals or the crosstabs, meaning their methodology, how they came to the conclusions they came to. And I looked at four polls, and then I looked at another one just today from CBS Marist. So there have been five polls that have come out just since both parties' conventions are done. So that's the full sample of people they've surveyed. And it's not registered voters, but likely voters. Okay, so you want to look at likely voters, and you want to look at surveys where the whole sample was after the party conventions. And did they release their methodology publicly? There's been more polls than those. But those are the only five that meet all three of those criteria. And here's what I can tell you. They're complete and total bunk. Fake news. I guess they could all just be at the same time, Steve.
Yeah.
Collectively
yeah.
bad at this, or they're lying.
Well, the thing, and let me jump in there, because this is such an important point, and you unpack this in the video you can find on YouTube, or you just subscribe to Blaze TV and check it out on Steve's show there. But when you go back, and you went back through 12 or 16 years of presidential elections to go look, what percentage of the people that come out to vote are actually registered independent? And then you got to look today at these polls and go, okay, yeah. Now who are they projecting actually going to come out? Like in the Fox News poll, they said what? That the registered independents coming out for this, that they're projecting,
was
5%. It like 5%? When normally it's up around 30%.
Yes. The average in the last seven presidential elections is 27%. The current Gallup survey tracking party registrations around the country, which is historically about the most accurate national poll in the country that tracks party registration trends, currently has 40% of Americans as registered independents. Fox is forecasting 5% of the electorate will be independent. That is their most latest poll. That's complete and total trash. I cannot believe they put their name on that.
Yeah, and the thing about that means they're off on the independent in that particular poll by a factor of 7 or 8, which takes us back to what you just mentioned. When we were looking at the COVID numbers and you were sending that information and we did a couple shows together on that, when they're off by factors of 20, 30, 40, 50, and so you have to realize you're being sold a bill of goods, or like Steve said at the beginning of the year, assume you're being lied to. Steve, I'm going to put you on hold. When we come back, we're going to look at some more of these polling information and then ask the big question, why are they doing this? Welcome back. It's Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. Is the polling wrong? Steve Dace on the Blaze TV. BlazeTV.com comes on right after Glenn Beck Monday through Friday, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Nope, he said in this video the other day. It's insulting, and these polls are insulting, complete fake news. But you got to understand what you're looking at, and you got to understand how that stuff gets presented, how they come up with it in the first place when you're thinking, who in the world would support Joe Biden other than the base? And how can you see this kind of difference between Biden's polling numbers and Trump's polling numbers? And you're sitting there wondering, is everybody else just crazy? No, you're just being manipulated. And you have to pay attention to that. But you got to understand when you look at a poll, how did the poll come about? So we're talking about the Fox News poll, the presence of independents over the last 16 years, how many of them come out and vote in a presidential election. And if a new poll is not representing that well, then it's completely off. And when it's off by a factor of 7 or 8, like the Fox News poll, it's complete bunk. Like you said, Steve, it's fake news and it's manipulative. So that's just one example. Give us a couple more examples of how bad these polls are.
Well, I got started going with this exercise, Steve, because Emerson put out a poll right after the conventions that had Trump getting the second highest percentage, tying Reagan 84, the second highest percentage of the Hispanic vote by a Republican president ever, the highest percentage of the black vote by a Republican president since presidential candidate since 1960, and winning whites by double digits. And they still had him losing the election. And I'm like, guys, if he does that, he's going to name the score, okay?
Right.
I mean, how can this possibly be true? And so you start looking at the methodologies of a lot of these polls. Today, CBS Marist put out a poll, showed Joe Biden is winning independents by 21 points, and yet they only have him up by 9. I promise you, if Joe Biden wins independents by 21 points with the energy of the Democratic base, he's going to have the greatest election route a Democrat has had since Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the middle of World War II.
Yeah.
You look at there was a Reuters poll that found only 10% of the electorate was going to be independents and had Joe Biden up by 12. In other words, they just pulled Democrats.
Right, I mean, basically.
We could just do this with all kinds of these polls. My favorite, though, of them all was the Monmouth poll. Now, when I was on the Cruz campaign, Monmouth was one of the public pollsters we had the most respect for.
Right.
So Monmouth puts out a poll, and this is the electorate they have. They have the electorate is plus three Democrat, and on average, in the last seven presidential elections, it's been 4 points more Democrats have turned out than Republican. Okay, so plus four is the average. So they have Joe Biden with worst Democratic turnout than Hillary Clinton received. Okay, they have Trump winning independents. Hillary or Biden with worse Democratic turnout than Hillary received, and they have 70% of the electorate are non-college graduates. Now, this is a group that Trump won in the last election by 7 points.
Yep.
Okay. In other words, Monmouth has the election being the exact turnout model that the Trump campaign's entire strategy is built around creating. Diminished Democrat turnout, Trump does well with independents, and Trump does well with a high turnout of non-college graduates. And they still have Trump losing by 7 points.
Jeez.
Now, Trump may lose on Election Day by 7 points, Steve, okay? But I promise you, all right? I promise you, this is almost second to the stone tablets coming down from the mountain. If he loses by 7 points, it will not be with an electorate that looks like that. That is the Trump campaign's dream scenario.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you have to ask yourself, how are they all this bad?
Well, that brings up the insidious question of what are they doing? Why are they doing this? And by the way, and I just recommended your book, A Nefarious Plot, to a really good friend of mine earlier today. And A Nefarious Plot, which is really kind of a Screwtape Letters feel to it. Steve wrote this a couple years ago. And Satan basically tasks a demon named Nefarious to take down the United States of America. It's really prophetic and quite accurate. And this looks to me, and you talked about it earlier in this video, which you guys can go watch at The Blaze TV with Steve Dace, or go. It's on YouTube as well. There is a nefarious plot going on here. I don't know that people are all that aware of it. I think more people are waking up to this, Steve. But the big question is, why are they doing this? Are we being manipulated? And what's the end game going on here?
There's only two options, and they're both very bad. All these people, with all their reputations and all their expertise, suddenly got very, very bad at this. That is one option. The other option is you are being preemptively gaslighted, that you are watching an operation being put into place to challenge the merit and outcome of the election by saying, hey, look at all this data we had from all these credible sources. There's no way he won this fair and square. This thing is rigged. This thing is stolen. And you take that to your courts. And you go judge shopping to some federal court,
yep.
The same ones that don't know what a gender is or what bathroom to use, and you march into there with all of your data to say, clearly this is at least prima facie evidence that the election was stolen. All of these credible media entities, enterprises, their polls, even Fox News, they all could not have been this wrong. It's one of those two things.
Yeah, it's remarkably insidious, and to think it's just kind of bogus and they all kind of screwed up at the same time is preposterous. But to assume that they're trying to set this up, and I'm sure you saw this, Pennsylvania Supreme Court just the other day ruled that they're going to allow for absentee ballots to be received in Pennsylvania through November 6th. So Pennsylvania literally cannot call that night on November 3rd. They cannot call the race for anybody that night because they're still collecting ballots through the 6th. And this stuff's getting more widespread around the country. It really is nefarious. It is as bad as it looks. And the question that none of us can really answer completely is who's behind it. But this is absolutely happening. So how concerned are you, Steve, with what's going to happen on November 3rd and the days after? You mentioned the courts. Can you imagine a scenario where this all ends up like Bush v. Gore back at the U.S. Supreme Court? And then guess who is going to be Johnny on the spot, who would probably put Joe Biden in office, would be John Roberts. I mean, this is unbelievable stuff.
You know, I'm a big sports fan, Steve, and the late great college basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian was known for recruiting kids that had already verbally committed to other schools. And everybody does it now, but it was a big scandal 20, 30 years ago. And he was asked once by Dick Vitale why he does that. He says, well, that if I wait till a kid commits to another school, now I know there's just one school I got to beat. Okay. And how does that play into this conversation? I just wait and find out what the election tally is on election day. And, you know, I just use the my own personal gerrymandering process of mail-in ballots, absentees in the courts, and now I know what vote total I've got to get after November the 3rd. Now, I do think if it ends up at the Supreme Court, strangely enough, many of the same impulses that have driven John Roberts to stab us in the back could actually work in our favor here. Mm. And I want to take your audience to the Hobby Lobby case. Remember, he was on the right side of that case, although with terrible rationale. But his real concern was, hey, John Roberts views himself as the guy holding America together.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
He views himself as the guy restraining the extremist, you know, impulses of both sides. And I could see him, if Donald Trump wins this thing on Election Day, I could see him stepping in and saying, listen, all right, I've ruled against this guy plenty of times in his presidency, but if I let you guys do a coup out here in the open, understand you're doing this to the people that own all the guns. This isn't going to end well, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I could actually see John Roberts step in and rule in favor in that situation, viewing himself as the gatekeeper of decorum.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, let's, Joe, and reason number 473 in the next few months to be praying over this election. Steve Dace, always great to have you. Thank you so much for your hard work and your intelligence and your wisdom and everything that you bring to the table. We all need to keep doing our part, and you're doing an awesome job. Blaze TV, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern time. Steve Dace, thanks, pal. Have a great weekend.
You got it, brother. God bless.
All right, pal. God bless. Talk to you later. That was Steve Dace. The Blaze TV Network, that's with Glenn Beck. He's on from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern time, right after Glenn Beck. This is Steve Noble. When we come back, class is in session. We're going to talk about intersectionality and critical theory and critical race theory, because it's all over the place. You're being played on that one, too. But do you know it? We're going to talk about that when we come back. Welcome back at Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. Very troubling days. And if you're really struggling with fear and anxiety over what's going on in this country, I would encourage you to go back. You can go back on Facebook Live. So go to the Steve Noble Show here on Facebook, and you can go there and watch yesterday's Theology Thursday with Pastor Chad Harvey from RFA Church. He's here in Raleigh, North Carolina, because we did yesterday's Theology Thursday show on God's providence. Okay, God's providence. And if you really understand and rest in God's providence, then the craziness that we see going on, the election, BLM, COVID, whatever, then you'll be reminded of what the scripture tells you, which is to be anxious for nothing. Well, how in the world do you do that? Well, that's by understanding and resting in the providence of God. So if you're really struggling with that, which I can't blame you, okay, I'm not casting dispersion on you. Go listen to, which you can get on a podcast, wherever you get your podcast, yesterday's show, or on Facebook Live, you can get it there. Go to thestevenobleshow.com, you can get it there. And listen to the show from yesterday. I think it will bless you and encourage you and will strengthen you. We haven't been given a spirit of fear, but of love, power, and a sound mind. Okay? Speaking of a sound mind, we are all being played and manipulated and taken down a certain track, forced to shut up because you can't possibly be right. And then sometimes you're sitting there going, they make an argument against you, especially those on the left. And you're like, am I crazy? What is going on here? Because there's a lot of things at play. These are philosophical things, scholarly things, theoretical things that are really at play big time, not only around the world, but especially here in America. So we're going to go through a few of those with the rest of the time that we have, okay? The first one is critical theory or critical race theory. And I have a great video, and it's good audio too. So if you're on the radio, you're going to be fine. So we're going to go through this. It's from a great website called What Would You Say? It's a Christian website on critical theory. Okay, this is 5 minutes and 49 seconds. We're going to go to that first. Then I'll have a few comments about it. This is critical theory as well as critical race theory. Okay, so then they go, well, that sounds academic, philosophical, college campus. No, this is happening all over the place. And as we go through this, you'll understand. You'll be like, oh, okay, that's what that is. So we're going to do that. And then we're going to do a video that's 3 minutes and 54 seconds from Ben Shapiro on intersectionality. He did that with Prager University. And then if I have time, I'll explain to you what gaslighting is, because you're getting gaslit all the time. Actually, Steve Dace in the last segment just mentioned gaslighting. So let's go first. Let's do this one. Critical theory from What Would You Say? Almost 6 minutes long. Listen. And if you're on Facebook Live, you can watch this. Really, really important. Let's run that.
You're in a conversation and someone says, since God cares about the oppressed, Christians should embrace critical theory because it's trying to eliminate oppression too. What would you say? Critical theory is one way our culture attempts to explain and confront power structures. Some Christians have embraced it as well. But what is it? To understand critical theory, we need to understand its two primary claims. First, everyone can be divided into two groups, those who have power and those who don't. Second, those who have power always oppress those who don't. But how do we know who the oppressed and who the oppressors are? According to critical theory, the categories of oppressor and oppressed are based on your group identity. Things like race, gender, religion, immigration status, income, sexual orientation, and gender identity determine whether we are oppressed or one of the oppressors. Of course, someone might be part of an oppressed group in one way, but one of the oppressors in another way. That's where the concept of intersectionality comes in. Intersectionality seeks to measure someone's level of oppression based on how many of these groups they identify with. For example, a black man is less oppressed than a black woman, who is less oppressed than a black lesbian. In critical theory, the degree to which you are oppressed determines your level of moral authority. The more categories of oppression someone identifies with, the more moral authority they have. As a result, the experience and perspective of a gay black woman is more valuable than the experience and perspective of a straight white man, regardless of what they have to say. And in the same way, the more oppressed someone is, the less moral responsibility they have for their actions. Those who aren't part of oppressed groups, straight white men, gain moral authority by surrendering to those who have it, the oppressed. And this is called being woke. Some people claim that since Jesus cares about oppression, critical theory and intersectionality should be embraced by Christians. But critical theory and intersectionality are not consistent with Christianity, and here are three reasons why. First, critical theory offers a different view of humanity than Christianity. Critical theory claims that our identity as human beings is rooted in things like race and gender, features that differ from person to person. The Bible grounds our identity as human beings and the value every human has in the fact that we are created in God's own image. This is something every human being shares. While critical theory pits some groups of people against other groups based on their status as oppressors or oppressed, the Bible says that we are all equal before God. Created equal, equally valuable, equally guilty of sin, equally deserving of punishment, and equally able to find grace and mercy in Jesus. Which leads to the second point. Critical theory offers a different view of sin than Christianity. The Bible identifies sin as anything that violates God's design for people, including unjust oppression of other people. But critical theory identifies sin only as oppression. As a result, advocates of critical theory would see biblical practices such as discipleship, correction, leadership, and reproof as sinful assertions of power if the speaker is among the oppressors, and would excuse sins like jealousy, anger, hatred, bitterness, unforgiveness, or envy among the oppressed. The Bible says that we are all guilty before God, regardless of social status, race, or economic situation. The Bible condemns oppression as one of, but certainly not the only way in which humans rebel against God. Because critical theory gets the problem wrong, it also gets the solution wrong, which leads to the third point. Critical theory offers a different view of salvation than Christianity. According to the Bible, because we are all equally guilty of sin, salvation can only be found in Jesus through repentance. Our hope is found in being forgiven of sin. Because critical theory teaches that oppressors are guilty and the oppressed are not, salvation for the oppressed is found not through repentance, but in social liberation here and now. Their hope is only through activism. In other words, critical theory has a completely different understanding of who we are, what the problem is, and how to fix it than Christianity. So next time someone, surely with good intentions, tells you that Christians should embrace critical theory because Jesus also cares about the oppressed, remember these three things. Critical theory offers a different view of humanity. Our identity is in our status as image bearers and children of God, not in our race, gender, income, or immigrant status. Critical theory offers a different view of sin. Oppression is wrong, but it is a symptom and not the disease. Critical theory offers a different view of salvation. We cannot solve our biggest problem. Jesus can. Our hope is not in our circumstances on earth, but our destiny in eternity. For What Would You Say? I'm Joseph Backholm.
And there you go. Okay, so that's... it's really important to understand that. And I'll put links up for this video on the Facebook Live page. Okay, so you can go check that out yourself. But it's super important to understand this. So let me just boil it down into more egregious and aggressive language. If you're a white male, okay, you're at the top of the food chain. Therefore, if you engage in any topic that has anything to do with anybody below that, which is pretty much most, then you just have to shut up. So white male, privilege, cisgender, all that stuff, you need to shut up because you're obviously an oppressed person. You can't speak up at all because you're a white male. You're an oppressor at birth because you're a white male. You're privileged oppressor. Okay, so you cannot say anything. So that's why you're going to have no mojo out there in the public. All right, now what's below that? A white female. But a white female, not quite as oppressive as a white male because men are more oppressive than women. Got it? And when you go to the bottom of that, you come down the scale. So is it, he mentioned a black man. Then there's a gay black man or a gay black Muslim. Now you got three different oppressed groups there. So they're way down the scale on the oppressed side. Then you go men to women. Women get it more than men. They're more oppressed than men. And then you throw in, now you got a black transgender woman. Okay. And then you as a white male or a white female speak into that, you have no moral authority. So the more you come down the scale, the more moral authority you have to speak up, which is why when you say anything right now, if you're a white male or a white female and you speak up about BLM, racism, anything going on with systemic racism, any of that stuff, what's going on in the big cities. If you're a white male or a white female and you say anything about black crime rates or you look at the federal crime statistics, and forget it. You have no moral authority. That's why it's so deeply offensive to liberals who are operating based on this theory, this critical theory, and then critical race theory just kind of sets aside all the other stuff and then just deals with your race. White, black, Hispanic, Asian, okay, then it just breaks it all down the same way. But all those groups, and if you're white, especially if you're a white male, you got no place in the conversation. You have no moral authority. But the lower you go down the rungs, the more moral authority they have and the less personal responsibility they have. See the trick? This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. 'Cause you are more than I could ever dream. All right, welcome back. Throwing a lot at you. It's kind of been a week of throwing a lot at you, hasn't it, Seth? It's been a pretty heavy week. A lot of content this week. Praise the Lord. And it's every once in a while, I was like, I'm going to go home and eat a bowl of ice cream and watch something that's brainless. But not from 4 to 5 p.m. this week. We've been in the deep end of the pool all week. Talked to Steve Dace earlier about these polls that are showing Joe Biden up over Trump. But the polls are completely whacked. And they're not whacked because they're screwing up. They're whacked because they're doing it on purpose. And they're doing it on purpose because the whole scene is being set so that on November 3rd, when Trump is declared the winner, which I think he will be, then you can say, well, hold on a second. This is against all the polling. Even Fox News had Biden up. And so what's going on here? So you got that. So you can start questioning the results of the election. And then you've got things going on like in Pennsylvania, where the Pennsylvania Supreme Court earlier this week said, hey, we think it's just fine that you collect and count absentee ballots all the way through November 6th. So literally, the election on November 3rd, literally, Pennsylvania, by the edict of the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court, cannot call the election for Donald Trump on November 3rd, even if he's up by 6 or 7%, because all they got to say is, oh, well, we still have who knows how many absentee ballots that are still out there. We sent 7 million of them out, and we've only gotten 980,000 back. So there could be another 300,000. And if those 300,000 break for Joe Biden, well, then Donald Trump didn't win Pennsylvania. See how that happens? Then it can go into the court system, Bush versus Gore, and the country's way worse today than it was 20 years ago. Okay? So that's the first two segments if you want to go watch that. Then we were just watching the video about critical theory, which is also critical race theory. So I've got the links up for that video on here on the Facebook Live page. And so if you're on radio, just go to my Facebook page, The Steve Noble Show, and you can find the links there. That one is critical theory biblical. Now we're going to go, and this one was mentioned in the last one, intersectionality. And I think Steve Dace even mentioned intersectionality earlier, and he also mentioned gaslighting, which we're going to try to get to. But let's do this one. This one is intersectionality. This is with Ben Shapiro. 3 minutes, 54 seconds, Prager University video. Let's roll that, and then we'll talk about it.
You probably think your opinions matter. You probably think you're an individual with unique experiences, thoughts, and ambitions. Well, I hate to break it to you, but according to current leftist orthodoxy, you're wrong. You see, your opinion only matters relative to your identity and where that identity ranks on the hierarchy of intersectionality. If you're now thinking, what the hell are you talking about? You haven't spent much time on a modern college campus. Intersectionality is a form of identity politics in which the value of your opinion depends on how many victim groups you belong to. At the bottom of the totem pole is the person everybody loves to hate, the straight white male. And who's at the top? Well, it's very hard to say because new groups claim victim status all the time. No one can keep track. So, how does this intersectionality thing play out? Something like this. Let's say you're a gay white woman. Your opinion matters, but less than that of a gay black woman. Why? Because while all women are oppressed by the patriarchy, and all gays are oppressed by the heterosexual majority, blacks have a victim status that whites obviously don't. Of course, a gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman, and so on. The more memberships you can claim in oppressed groups, the more aggrieved you are, and the higher you rank. Get it? Good, because it's about to get even more complicated. Intersectionality takes your victim status and uses it as the basis for creating alliances with other victim groups. 30 or 40 years ago, activists encouraged racial solidarity among blacks to combat oppression. But today, that's not enough. Today's activists demand blacks make common cause with other allegedly oppressed people, gays, lesbians, transgenders, Palestinians, Native Americans, whomever. Here's the logic. A black gay and a Hispanic gay may not belong to the same victim group racially, but they do belong to the same victim group on the basis of their sexuality. By focusing on the places where various victim identities intersect, intersectionality creates a united us versus them paradigm, righteous victims rising up together to fight the oppressor, those dreaded straight white men. This explains why at a rally protesting the treatment of Palestinians by Israel, you might see a contingent of lesbian activists. That's intersectionality at work. They're so united by their victim status that it doesn't matter if Islamists throw gays off of buildings or murder female family members who defy their father's wishes. Victim solidarity trumps all other considerations. The term intersectionality was coined by Kimberly Crenshaw, a professor of law at Columbia University. She explains that intersectionality was my attempt to make feminism, anti-racist activism, and anti-discrimination law do what I thought they should, highlight the multiple avenues through which racial and gender oppression were experienced. To Crenshaw, America is a terrible place full of victim groups, each with their particular set of grievances. Why shouldn't these victim groups get together and form a political coalition unified by the belief that the majority society has harmed them? That some professor tucked away in an ivory tower would come up with this nonsense is not surprising. What is surprising and disturbing is that so many people actually go along with it. America is the most open, least racist nation on the planet. That Professor Crenshaw is free to spin her nonsensical theories and get paid well for it should offer adequate proof of that. And since when do you have to live someone's experience in order to understand them? You don't have to live as a slave in order to understand that slavery is cruel and wrong. You don't have to live as a woman in order to recognize the evil of rape. Finally, and most important, intersectionality promotes the biggest hoax of all, that we aren't individuals who are to be judged on the basis of how we act, but are merely members of groups to be judged on the basis of our group identity. In other words, you and I, as individuals with our unique experiences, thoughts, and ambitions, count for nothing. Our racial and sexual identity count for everything. It's hard to imagine an idea less likely to produce a free and equal America than that. But what do I know? I'm just a straight white male. I'm Ben Shapiro for Prager University.
All right, so got that? See that? I put the link up on the Facebook live feed. Okay, so you can go watch that. So he's a straight white male, so he's got nothing to say. That's why you got so many young people today, because this is dominant philosophical, quote-unquote, theology on most college campuses nationwide, which is why we have so many young people. Have you noticed this? So many people, mostly 35 and under, that hate America because they think America, they think rich, privileged white males started the country, which means everybody else, especially slavery being the perfect example, are just oppressed peoples. See that? So America, no, terrible. Why? Because America's basically started and run by rich white males, and rich white males are the big oppressors, and so everything about America is tainted.
everything. That's intersectionality. And then you got all these different groups coming together. So you have African-Americans, homosexuals, Hispanic, whatever, transgender, all these different groups. You just got to break up the entire culture into all their little silos. But then, since the white guy's the man, then we come together and we work together in order to defeat the man, which feels like we're defeating evil. And you see how this is all messed up. And the problem here, from a gospel perspective, this is really a big deal. From a gospel perspective, is individuals are no longer judged based on their behavior. It's just whatever group you belong to. And then we lower the bar for what's sin, because everything becomes justifiable because you're an oppressed group and you're working with other oppressed group for the good of the country, which means you got to deal with the oppressor, which is a white male. See the problem? And that's how all this works. And then all of a sudden, nothing is a sin. Everything's justifiable. You're burning stuff down? Of course you are. Your whole people group and all these other groups have been oppressed for 400 years. What do you expect to have happen? And it just baptizes all kinds of sin. See the problem there? Okay, let's do this. Gaslighting. Just trying to move fast. I don't throw in a lot at you. Go listen to it again and check it out. Okay? This is really important for us to understand what's coming at us. Where is this coming from? All right, gaslighting. Gaslighting is a form of psychological abuse aimed at controlling a person by altering reality to the point where the person will doubt their own sanity. This actually comes from a 1930s play called Gaslight. Okay, the main character in the play literally tries to drive his wife crazy by gradually dimming the gas-powered lights in their home. When she notices the lights dimming, her husband not only denies that the lights are dimming, he convinces her that she's imagining it to the point where she questions her own sanity. Okay, so we're in this perpetual state of gaslighting now. This is happening all over the place. So what you're being told by the media is at complete odds with what you're seeing, with your own two eyes. Okay, so here's some examples. It's a great little paper I found. Some examples. Let's see, but my buddy Bill Mann sent it to me. New York State has twice as many deaths from COVID-19 than any other state. But we're told that the New York governor, Andy Cuomo, has handled the pandemic better than any other governor. But if we support policies of governors like up in South Dakota, whose states have only a fraction of the infections and deaths as New York, we're called anti-science and we want people to die. What? You're being gaslighted, okay? So if we want to solve that problem in North Carolina, you know who to vote for governor, right? Danforth, not Comrade Cooper. We see mobs of people looting stores, smashing windows, setting cars on fire, and burning down buildings, but we're told that these demonstrations are peaceful protests. And when we call this destruction of our cities riots, we're called racists. Are you crazy? No, you're being gaslighted. We see the major problem destroying many inner cities is crime, murder, gang violence, drug dealing, drive-by shootings, armed robbery. But we're told that it's not crime, but the police that are the problem in the inner cities. We're told we must defund the police and remove law enforcement from crime-riddled cities to make them safer. But if you advocate for more policing in cities overrun by crime, we're accused of being white supremacists and racists. Are you crazy? Nope. You're being gaslighted. The United States of America accepts more immigrants than any other country in the world. The vast majority of the immigrants are people of color, and these immigrants are enjoying freedom and economic opportunity not available to them in their country of origin. But we're told that the United States is the most racist and oppressive country on the planet, and if we disagree, we're called racist and xenophobic. Are you crazy? No. You're being gaslighted. Capitalist countries are the most prosperous countries in the world. The standard of living is the highest in capitalist countries. We see more poor people move up the economic ladder to the middle and even the wealthy class through their effort and ability in capitalist countries than any other economic system in the world. But we're told capitalism is an oppressive system designed to keep people down. So you ask yourself, well, am I wrong? Am I crazy? Nope. You're being gaslighted. One more. The most egregious example of gaslighting is the concept of white fragility. You spend your life trying to be a good person, trying to treat people fairly and with respect. You disavow racism and bigotry in all its forms. You judge people solely on the content of their character and not by the color of their skin. You don't discriminate based on race or ethnicity. But you're told that you are a racist, not because of something you did or said, but solely because of the color of your skin. You know instinctively that charging someone with racism because of their skin color is itself racist. You know that you're not a racist, so you defend yourself and your character, but you're told that your defense of yourself is proof of your racism. Are you crazy? No, you're being gaslighted. You have to understand the tools of the world, which also is the tools of the enemy, okay? Class dismissed. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.